ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीर्वुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 24। दिस चैप्टर इज एंटाइटल्ड वर्शिपिंग गोवर्धन हिल। टेक्स्ट नंबर 37। येषो वजानतो मर्त्यान् कामरूपी वनौकसः हन्ति ह्यस्मै नमस्याम शर्मणे आत्मनो गवा। येषो वजानतो मर्त्या कामरूपी वनौकसः हन्ति ह्यस्मै नमस्याम शर्मणे आत्मनो गवाम्। एष वो जानतो मर्त्या कामरूपी वनौकसः हन्ति ह्यस्मै नमस्याम शर्मणे आत्मनो गवाम्।
येषवो जानतो मर्त्यान् कामरूपी वनौकसः हन्ति ह्यस्मै नमस्याम शर्मणे आत्मनो गवाम्। वर्ड टू वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन। येषः दिस वन अवजानत दोस हु आर नेग्लेक्टफुल मर्त्यान मॉर्टल्स कामरूपी अस्यूमिंग एनी फॉर्म एट विल सच एज दैट ऑफ द स्नेक्स हु लिव अपॉन द हिल वनौकसः रेजिडेंट्स ऑफ द फॉरेस्ट हंति विल किल He certainly asmai to him namasyama let us pay our obeisances sharmane for the protection atmanah of ourselves gavam and of the cows. Translation and purport by the disciples of his His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, translation. This Govardhan hill, assuming any form he wishes, will kill any residents of the forest who neglect him. Therefore, let us pay our obeisances to him for the safety of ourselves and our cows. Purport. Kama Rupi indicates that the form of Govardhan can manifest as poisonous snakes, wild animals, falling rocks and so on, all of which are competent to kill a human being. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, the Lord presented 6 theoretical points in this chapter. That karma alone is sufficient to determine one's destiny. Second, that one's conditional nature is the supreme controller. Third, the modes of nature are the supreme controller. Fourth, the Supreme Lord is simply a dependent aspect of karma. And fifth, he is under the control of karma. Sixth, one's occupation is the actual worshipable deity. The Lord presented these arguments not because he believed them, but rather he wanted to stop the impending sacrifice to Indra and divert it to himself in the form of Govardhan hill. In this way, the Lord desired to agitate that falsely proud demigod. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namavo Vishnupadaya Krishna Preshnaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Pashyati Deshatarine Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavranda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram 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 Hare Hare. So we are almost at the conclusion of this particular chapter entitled Worshipping Govardhan Hill. Tomorrow is the last verse of this chapter. So in this chapter, one of the most wonderful pastimes which Lord Krishna performed in this chapter and the next chapter, this pastime is being described, how Lord Krishna initiated the worship of Govardhan hill and how he lifted Govardhan hill, which will be described in the next chapter. So in this chapter, Lord Krishna saw that the Vrajavasis were making elaborate arrangements to perform a sacrifice. So at that time, Krishna inquired from them about what they were doing. And Krishna especially asked his father, Nanda Maharaj. And Nanda Maharaj, he first actually explained the logic behind the worship of Indra. He said that we cowherd men, we are actually dependent on rain. And in fact, our whole existence is based on rain. And Indra actually provides us rain. And we want to show our gratitude to Indra by actually worshipping him. And then Krishna actually, in order to stop the Vrajavasis from the performance of this Indra Yajna, Krishna actually spoke this Karma Mimamsa philosophy. So various speakers have already spoken on this subject matter. So in this, like today we read in that purport, Srila Sridhar Swami is actually summarizing the 6 arguments which actually Krishna spoke to Nanda Maharaj, so that actually they would stop the Indra Yajna. And then Krishna actually told them to worship Govardhan hill with the same paraphernalia which they were actually going to use to worship Indra. So in this particular verse, Krishna is telling to the Vrajavasis, this Govardhan hill, assuming any form he wishes, will kill any residents of the forest who neglect him. Therefore, we should actually pay our obeisances to Govardhan hill for our safety and for the safety of the cows. So he is telling that Govardhan Hill can assume any form, like a snake or a falling rock or a wild animal, and can actually kill. So he is actually, Krishna is using fear as a medium to inspire the Vrajavasi so that they will not neglect the worship of Govardhan Hill. So in today's class we'll try to discuss certain lessons regarding this particular pastime. Firstly, as I think few weeks back Gaurang Prabhu mentioned in that Bhagavatam class, although Krishna spoke various arguments to, Krishna gave so many arguments to Vrajavasis so that they would actually stop the performance of Indra Yajna, ultimately the Vrajavasis, they did not actually stop the Indra Yajna because of those arguments. They actually stopped the Indra Yajna because actually Krishna wanted them to stop the Indra Yajna, and then Krishna wanted them to worship Govardhan Hill. So what is the what is the proof that Vrajavasis did not believe in the Karma Mimamsa philosophy and they stopped the sacrifice only to please Krishna? Because if you see in this particular verse, Krishna is telling that this Govardhan Hill can assume any form and can actually kill any residents of the forest. So if the Vrajavasis had used logic, then they could actually question this Krishna. They could have told, you previously told that ultimately karma is supreme. Even the demigods and others, they are also subordinate to karma. So there is no need to worship Indra separately. So they could have actually used the same argument which Krishna spoke to them to actually not worship Govardhan Hill. Why are you telling that Govardhan Hill can assume any form and kill us? Ultimately, whatever we do, it has to be provided by the superior forces. So they could have actually argued like that. So, but Vrajavasis, they actually did not argue. I felt like this shows that Vrajavasis, they did not actually perform the worship of Govardhan Hill, they did not stop the Indra Yajna because Krishna presented some logical arguments. They ultimately, they did whatever they did only to please Krishna. So we see that ultimately, to become a Vrajavasi means one has to actually go beyond logic. So we have to use logic and reasoning, but we should also know that logic and reasoning also have a limitation. Because in this case, like Vrajavasi, they did not use the logic and reasoning. So you must know, like in one class, His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj mentioned that. So we use logic and reasoning to understand Krishna conscious principles, to present Krishna conscious principles. But we must also know that logic also has a limitation. Because the Vrajavasis, they were actually blind followers of Krishna. The same Vrajavasis, like Vishnu Chakatakur explains in the beginning of this chapter, when Krishna asked Nanda Maharaj as to why they were performing this sacrifice, that time Vishnu Chakatakur says that, so Nanda Maharaj explained the logic behind the worship of this Indra Yajna. And then he told whatever these four verses he spoke, from 8th verse to 11th verse. So that time he was actually presenting in a logical manner that how we should actually show gratitude to whoever actually has helped us. Because Indra is supplying us rain, so we are actually performing this Indra Yajna. So there Nanda Maharaj presented in a logical way. But here, he is not using logic, although in one sense what Krishna is saying is actually illogical against what he spoke previously. So that means, Vrajavasis, they present a logical argument, but then they did not actually depend on logic too much. They were ultimately dependent on Krishna. They were not dependent on logic. So we must know that what logic can do and what logic cannot do. So logic can only examine the rationale of spiritual experience and logic and evaluate the contents of spiritual experience. So Chaitanya Charitamrita writes in his article, but logic cannot actually create spiritual experience and it cannot replace spiritual experience. So only when we actually practice spirituality, that can actually give spiritual experience. So simply by some intellectual analysis, that has actually certain limitation. Ultimately, one has to become actually blind followers of Krishna. But in our level, we have to follow Tadviddhi Pranipatena Pariprashnena Sevaya. But we must also know the limitations of the logic. So like logic is like prescription of the doctor. When a doctor actually prescribes a medicine, so simply by the prescription, your disease will not get cured. Ultimately, you have to actually apply the medicine. You have to take the medicine. Our logic is like a map. So simply by the map which actually shows how to reach the destination, you cannot reach the destination. You have to actually put effort to reach the destination. So that is the point actually. So that is why it is said that one should not be overly dependent on the logic. One should be skeptical about skepticism. As like he says in this article, a beautiful point which I liked very much. So logic should be, we should not make logic as the master, but logic should be made our minister. So there is a difference between making logic as the master and as the minister. So when we make logic as the master, that means like we are overly dependent on logic. So then, when we make logic as a minister, then it actually becomes a dictator that locks us into a meaningless and purposeless existence. It means like all the time we will be making an intellectual analysis, all the time we will be actually questioning every small act. But on the other hand, we should make logic as a minister. When we make logic as a minister, it actually helps us separate true spirituality from pseudo spirituality or shadowy spirituality. So that is the first lesson which I want to highlight here. That here then Nanda Maharaj and Vrajavasis, they just blindly followed Krishna ultimately. They did not actually question Krishna when Krishna is trying to use fear as a medium to not worship Govardhan, to worship Govardhan. And the second thing which we want to see in today's class is that when Krishna actually spoke to the Vrajavasis, so there are actually two aspects of his preaching. The first aspect of his preaching is that to stop the Vrajavasis from the worship of Indra. And the second aspect of his preaching is to inspire them to worship Govardhan Hill. So if we see in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna actually says that those who worship the demigods to fulfill their selfish desires, they are actually less intelligent. So although actually demigod worship is considered less intelligent, but still we must know that demigod worship is actually is within the house of the Vedas. So that is why Krishna says that if a person wants to worship a particular demigod, I will make the faith of the person steady so that he can actually devote himself to that particular demigod. So demigod worship is a sub-religious principle, but it is a religious principle. In one sense, Vrajavasis worshipping Indra is not wrong, because they are just like Dwarkadish Prabhu gave that class on Sunday about a month back. They are just trying to show their gratitude to Indra. And gratitude is one of the foundational principles of spiritual life. So, the point is that demigod worship is considered less intelligent, but still, it is a religious principle. So, if we see that, suppose if a person is a, Lakpati, but when a Lakpati becomes a Crorepati, then he is actually, it is considered he is actually advancing. But if a crorepati becomes a lakhpati, that means like he is degrading. So from the point of view of a person who is not following any religious principle, so when he is actually worshipping demigod, that means he is at least within the house of the Vedas, he is actually advancing. Like from the point of view of a person who has failed in an exam 5 times and then ultimately he has passed with 35 marks. So we will actually congratulate him, oh, ultimately passed. But if a crorepati becomes a lakhpati, or if a person who is always scoring like 95 marks, but if he has actually failed in an exam, like we will be actually condemn him. Why did you not study? Why did you fail in the exam? So, from the point of view of a person who is engaged in the worship of Krishna, who is completely surrendered to Krishna, when he is worshipping a demigod, that means like he is actually degrading. So, Krishna, that is why when he preached the Vrajavasi, he is like, you are my eternal devotees, why are you engaged in the worship of this insignificant demigod Indra? So that was actually Krishna's point. So the point is, the lesson is that Krishna not only stopped the Vrajavasis from the worship of Indra, but he also elevated them to the worship of Govardhan Hill. So there is an important lesson in preaching. So when we meet people who may not be actually practicing devotional service, but they may be following some sub-religious principle. They may be worshipping demigod, or they may be actually philanthropic in nature. They may be altruistic in nature. So although it is not the essence of the Vedas, but at least by following some sub-religious principle, they are within the house of the Vedas. So when we preach to them, while we are preaching, if they actually stop the demigod worship, or if they stop doing those, say, philanthropy, but if they are not come to the point of worshipping Krishna, then we have made them worse than what they were before. Because at least previously they were following some sub-religious principle. But if you have not elevated them to worship of Krishna, they have actually made them worse than what they were before. So the point is that the purpose of preaching is not to actually break the faith of the people in the sub-religious principle which they were doing, but to actually elevate their faith to the point of devotional service to the Lord. So that is one thing we learn. That although Krishna used the means of karma mimamsa philosophy to destroy their faith in the worship of Indra, but the principle we learn is that Krishna is not that he simply stopped them from the worship of the demigods, but he actually elevated them to the worship of Govardhan Hill. So this is a general lesson we can learn on the principle of preaching. And we see the same principle was also followed by Narada Muni in preaching to Prachina Barishat. When Narada Muni preached to Prachina Barishat was actually performing animal sacrifices based on the Vedas. So Narada Muni preached to him in order to stop the animal sacrifice and also elevated him to the worship of Krishna, to the platform of devotional service. But in the case of Narada Muni, he did not actually use the atheistic philosophy to inspire Prachina Barishat to stop him from the performance of the animal sacrifices which are based on the Vedas. Because Prabhupada writes in the purport that Lord Buddha could actually preach an atheistic philosophy. But Narada Muni was aware that I cannot use the same means which Lord Buddha used, reject the Vedas. Narada Muni was aware that I cannot use the same means which Krishna used, the karma mimamsa philosophy, which is an atheistic philosophy, to tell Prachina Barishat to stop the worship of the demigods by performing the animal sacrifice. So Narada Muni was innovative in his preaching. He used an allegorical story, but still he was aware of his limitation, that he was aware that I cannot actually imitate Lord Buddha, I cannot imitate Lord Krishna. So we have to be innovative in our preaching, but at the same time we have to be aware of our limitation. Otherwise, if we are innovative in the same way some highly advanced devotee, then when we are not having that same level of purity, then we may actually make some mistake, and then we may actually commit we may fall down. So Narada Muni is actually aware of, he is actually innovative in his preaching, but at the same time he is not using an atheistic philosophy to stop Prachina Barisha from the animal sacrifices, because he is aware of his limitations. So this is a lesson on preaching. And another important point which I want to take up in this class is that like Krishna, why he actually spoke this Karma Mimamsa philosophy? He could have spoken Yatha Taroru Mulat Nishechinena. If you just water the root of the tree, ultimately the demigods will be satisfied. So why he used the Karma Mimamsa philosophy? Because the reason is that Krishna wanted to agitate Indra. Krishna wanted to crush the pride of Indra. So another important thing, that when we don't understand the intention of a person who may be speaking something, then we may actually misunderstand why he is speaking like that. So like for example, in the 10th canto, after the description of Rasa Leela, Parishit Maharaj asks a question to Shukadeva Goswami. Parishit Maharaj says that Lord Krishna is the father of religion, he is the speaker of religion, then why did he actually dance with other men's wives in the middle of the night? Then Shukadeva Goswami replies to Parishit Maharaj. Shukadeva Goswami says that first he mentions that even the great controllers, even great demigods or great controllers of this world, if they happen to do some abominable activity, they will not get affected by their abominable activity. Even if the great controllers, if they don't get affected by the wrong activity, then what to speak of Krishna, who is actually the controller of all the controllers? How will he get affected by dancing with other men's wives? So then next he says, Shukadeva Goswami says, but if a person thinks, oh, if great demigods, if they perform some abominable activity, and if a common man starts imitating the demigods, oh, if they can perform that activity, then we can also perform the same activity. Then if the common man does like that, then he will actually fall down. He will be ruined. So one should not even think in his mind to imitate the activities of great souls. He gives the example, like Lord Shiva, he drank poison. If a common man thinks that, oh, I can also drink poison, and if he drinks poison, he will actually get ruined. He will actually die. So then Parishit Maharaj asks the question to Shukadeva Goswami. But then there is a principle, yadyad acharati sreshtas tattat yeve tarojana. So common people should follow in the footsteps of the great souls. Common men follow the standards set by the great souls. So this principle, one is supposed to follow in the footsteps of the great souls. Then when should we apply this principle? If you are saying you cannot actually imitate the great soul, then how can we apply this particular principle? Then Shukadeva Goswami says that Ishvaranam vachas satyam tataiva charitam kvachit tesham yatsva vacho yuktam buddhi mam tat samacharet. He says the statements of the Lord's empowered servants are always true, and the acts they perform are exemplary when consistent with those statements. Therefore, one who is intelligent should carry out their instructions. So So what he is trying to say is that when a great soul performs an activity, we should actually follow that activity if it is consistent with what he speaks. And not only that, we should follow the activity, we should follow the activity of a great soul when it is consistent with what he speaks. And not only that, it should be consistent with what is mentioned in the scriptures. That means, like Krishna danced with other men's wives. But Krishna nowhere recommended that one should dance with other men's wives. So because his actions are not consistent with what he has spoken, so we should not follow that. And even if Krishna appears to speak something wrongly, but we should consult whether it is mentioned in the scriptures or not. If it is actually contradicting what is there in the scriptures, we should still not follow it. So that is the case which is happening here. So Krishna is speaking the Karma Mimamsa philosophy, but it is not consistent with what is there in the scriptures. So one should not actually follow it. So Vishnu Chakra Thakur gives an example that in the first canto, in that chapter called Son of Drona Punished, when Ashwatthama was bound by Arjuna, so Bhima told Arjuna to kill Ashwatthama. And Yudhishthira Maharaj and Draupadi, they told Arjuna to kill, not to kill Ashwatthama. And Krishna also told Arjuna to kill Ashwatthama. But Arjuna did not actually kill Ashwatthama. Why Arjuna did not kill Ashwatthama? Because although Krishna himself told Arjuna to kill Ashwatthama, but elsewhere Krishna has also mentioned, or elsewhere it is mentioned in the scriptures, that even if a brahmana commits a sinful activity, he should not be killed. He should be punished in a different way. He should be punished by insulting him by, or by shaving his head like that. It is mentioned in the scriptures. And so Arjuna, Arjuna did not kill Ashwatthama because what Krishna spoke was not consistent with what is there in the scriptures. So, apparently Arjuna disobeyed Krishna. But actually, because it is not consistent with what is there in the scriptures. So that means that one should know, even to follow a great soul, one should know actually what is there in the scriptures. One should actually know, one cannot be overly dependent on and the words of a guru or sadhu. One should also know what is there in the scripture. Because in a certain context, in a certain circumstance, sometimes a great personality may speak something which is contradictory, may speak something irreligious. But if we are not conversant with the scriptures, or if we are not consulting other sadhus, then we might commit a mistake and we might actually end up following that wrong philosophy. As a Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj writes a beautiful point in one of his books. He says that it is healthy to avoid both extreme dependence or extreme independence on Guru, Sadhu and Shastra in order to make progress in spiritual life. It is healthy to avoid both extreme dependence or extreme independence on any one of the three, Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. So the point is, so one needs the guidance of others in order to read the Shastra. And we cannot be overly dependent on the Shastra also, because we might actually, we might have a wrong understanding, because we might read the Shastra according to our own limited intelligence. So we should consult the sadhus. And along with the consultation of sadhus, we should also read the Shastra. So this balance of when we depend on Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, all three, then one can make a healthy progress. That is actually healthy for one's spiritual life. So another thing, if we see the same aspect from another point of view. So Krishna is speaking this atheistic philosophy, but his intention is to humble Indra. His intention is to crush the pride of Indra. So sometimes when we are not aware of the intention of a person, that we might actually misunderstand. Like suppose, like even when a person is giving a class, so he might give a particular example by seeing the audience who are present in the class, who may be from a particular cultural background. He might give a particular example. But somebody who is sitting in some other part of the world, so when he hears that example, sometimes he might think, oh, why did he speak that example? So he might actually misunderstand. But the speaker has spoken by seeing the particular audience who is present in the class. But sometimes when a person who is present in some other part of the world, like when he hears that class, he may think like, oh, what kind of example is he? Because he is from a completely from a different cultural background. So he might actually misunderstand. He may not understand the context. So that is why, like, we need a simply hearing from the cassette, it cannot actually substitute the personal guidance or personally hearing from a devotee. Because sometimes there may be a possibility that we might misunderstand. Like, example is here only. Because Krishna, when he is speaking the Karma Mimamsa philosophy, he is seeing the Vrajavasis and he is having in mind Indra. So we understand the intention of the Krishna with the help of the acharyas who are presenting what is the intention of Krishna who is speaking this philosophy. Without the help of the acharyas, if we simply read the verses, so we might actually misunderstand. So that is why we need actually the personal guidance of a living spiritual authority along with the scriptures or along with, say, hearing a lecture in audio or something. So this is another point which I want to mention. So something about the intention. So Krishna is speaking the atheistic philosophy, but his intention is to crush the pride of Indra. So there is a quote on intention. So William Blake, he says, the truth spoken with bad intention can be more destructive than all the lies we can invent. So one may speak the right philosophy, but if he speaks with a bad intention, it can be more destructive. But on the other hand, when he speaks the wrong philosophy, but with a good intention, so that can be actually fruitful. So Krishna is speaking the wrong philosophy, but with a good intention. Or another quote which says that, road to hell is very much paved by people who believe they have good intentions. So this is like another quote. So we must know, like, another important lesson we can see is that the scriptures are not textual, but they are contextual. So when we read the when you take the text of these scriptures, then we might think, oh, Krishna is speaking the atheistic philosophy, so I can also follow it. But we must always know the scriptures are filled with the emotions of the person who is speaking, and they are spoken in a particular context. Like, for example, like Narada Muni tells Dhruva Maharaj in the fourth canto, he says that many people, they try to, he says that after trying this process for many, many births and remaining unattached to material contamination, many austere yogis were unable to find the path of God realization. So Dhruva Maharaj has come to actually worship Lord Vishnu so that he can actually get a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma. So Narada Muni is saying that there are many people in the past who have tried to worship Lord Vishnu by performing different austerities for many lifetimes, but still they could not worship, they could not actually attain God realization. So better that you go home, and then when you grow up, when you become old, then maybe by the mercy of the Lord you will get a chance to perform these mystic performances. Then when you become old, after 70 years or 80 years, then you can take to spirituality. So Narada Muni is speaking this. So if you literally take these words, so Narada Muni is saying that means like we take to Krishna consciousness after 60, 70 years, there is no need to take to Krishna consciousness at this age. Huh? But Narada Muni, the same Narada Muni, through Prahlad Maharaj, he said that Kaumaram Acharit Pragyam. One should take to spiritual life right from the age of 5. Then why is Narada Muni speaking like this here to Dhruva Maharaj? Because he is testing the determination of Dhruva Maharaj. So the point is that means when Narada Muni is speaking this, he is having a particular thoughts in his mind. So that what is going on in the mind of Narada Muni, that we come to know from the other acharyas who are actually giving purports to it. So that is why Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Devotion, when he talks about this Anya Bilashita Shunyam, Anukulena Krishna Anushilanam. So when that context he says, Anushilanam means one should execute devotional service by following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas and one's personal spiritual master. So living guidance is always important. So then, another thing which I want to mention is that about this particular point, that Krishna is talking about, Krishna wants to actually crush the pride of Indra. So here, coming to this point of pride, so if you consider when we actually differentiate between a material master and a spiritual master, or a material servant and a spiritual servant, there are actually two differences. In the material world, in the case of a master, he doesn't want to share his opulences with the servant. There is always a feeling of insecurity. But in the spiritual platform, Krishna actually never feels hesitant to actually share his opulences with his servants. Krishna says, like when a person goes to spiritual world, Krishna gives, in the Vaikuntha planet, Krishna gives the same 400 form. Krishna gives a person residence in the same abode. In the material world, a servant has a servant quarters. He has a separate uniform. And the master, he may be buying some costly brands, but servant has a separate uniform. And Krishna says in the 14th chapter, Idam jnanam upashritya mama sadharmya magata sargepi nopajayante pralayena vyatanticha. Mama sadharmya magata. Krishna says, by getting this knowledge of the three modes, a person will attain my nature. Means like Krishna is ready to share his own transcendental nature with his devotees. But in the case of the demigods, in the case of a master who is having material consciousness, he feels insecurity. So if he actually comes above in the hierarchy, what will happen to me, or how can I there is an insecurity. And this is the difference between the material master and the master and the spiritual platform. And in the case of a servant, in the case of a material servant, that after, suppose if the master empowers him and gives him power, but after getting power, a servant actually forgets the master and he tries to supersede the master. But in the spiritual platform, a devotee, although he is empowered by the Supreme Lord, he never forgets his position that he is a servant and Krishna is the master. So we can see clearly, there are so many examples in the scriptures, but I'll just quote two verses, or maybe more. So one example, if we see the description of the Vaikuntha planets in the third canto, it is described, Yat sankulam haripada natimatra drishtair vaidur yamara katahema mayair vimanai yesham bruhat katitata smita shobi mukhya krishnatmanam naraja adadurutsmayadhyai. It is described that yat sankulam haripada natimatra drishtair. So in the Vaikuntha planets, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha planet travel in the airplanes made of lapis lazuli, emerald and gold. And although crowded by their consorts, who have large hips and beautiful smiling faces, they cannot be stimulated to passion by their mirth and beautiful charms. So Vaikuntha planet is a place where a person has so many resources for sense gratification. And not only a person has so many resources for sense gratification, a person is given greater freedom. So it is actually, in one sense, a dangerous place. When you have greater resources to enjoy sense gratification and you have greater freedom, then you can actually misuse it. Like sometimes we think, like Vaikuntha planets means like once we go to the spiritual world, we will never come back to the spiritual world. So we think that maybe we will become hypnotized. So once we go to the spiritual world, we will automatically never make a decision not to come back to the spiritual world. Actually, it is not that we will become hypnotized. Actually, in the Vaikuntha planets, a person has greater freedom. Because in the spiritual platform, the Krishna, when a devotee advances, he gives greater resources and he gives greater freedom also. He never tries to actually suppress. So the speciality of the Vaikuntha planets is that although there is greater facility for enjoyment, although there is greater freedom, the devotees never make the wrong choice. So Prabhupada writes a beautiful purport that it is specifically mentioned here that a woman's large hips are very attractive and they stimulate man's passion. But the wonderful feature of Vaikuntha Loka is that although the women have large hips and beautiful faces and are decorated with ornaments of emeralds and jewels, the men are so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that the beautiful bodies of the women cannot attract them. So it is not because they are actually hypnotized or their free will is taken away, they never make a wrong choice. But because they are so much absorbed in the service of Krishna, they have such intense desire to serve Krishna, although there is so much of opportunity to fall down, they never fall down. But on the other hand, when you contrast the description of Vaikuntha Loka with the description of heavenly planets, in the heavenly planets also, there is so much of facility for sense gratification, and there is greater freedom. But the demigods, they pray in the fifth canto, Kim dushkurair na kratubis tapovratair danadibir va jujayena falguna nayatra nara yana pada pankaja smritim pramashta atishaya indriya utsavat. The demigods are saying, what is the use of these sacrifices? What is the use of charity? What is the use of this performance of yajna, etc.? After performing all these things, we have attained the position of a demigod. But then, in the heavenly planets, because there is so much of facility for sense gratification, and because of this excessive sense gratification, we have almost forgotten your lotus feet. So in the heavenly planets, they actually forget because of the demigods, they forget their, or the servant, demigods are also servants of Krishna, but they are having material consciousness. So they forget that they are actually the servants. So Indra, he is a servant of Krishna, but he has actually forgotten his position. He has actually become filled with pride. So I was, but on the other hand, in the Vaikuntha planets, they never actually forget their position. So I was going through, there's a scripture called as Yadava Abhyudayam. In the Sri Vaishnava tradition, one of the great Sri Vaishnava Acharya called as Vedanta Desika. He's like a Jiva Goswami of Sri Sampradaya. So he has written a book called Yadava Abhyudayam, describing the pastimes of Krishna. So in that, he describes his Govardhan Leela. So that particular chapter, he has entailed the chapter as Chitra Sarga. Chitra Sarga means the wonderful chapter. The chapter which is actually filled with wonder. So in that chapter, is actually describing the glories of Govardhan, but in a very unique way, actually. So he actually, because he is one of the scholars of Sri Vaishnava tradition, he has composed such Sanskrit poetry that certain shlokas, there are only two alphabets are used. And in certain shlokas, only one alphabet is used. It's only with one alphabet he has composed the entire shloka, and other acharyas are given four different meanings to those shlokas. And all those shlokas are actually glorifying Govardhan. Of course, I don't have diacritics of that, I'm not reciting the shlokas. But one important point which I want to mention is that, so he has written different shlokas glorifying Govardhan, but at the end of the description of the Govardhan, he says that there are so many wonders in this mountain, but only a little has been said, and there are more than 10,000 yet to be seen. But the main purpose is to do the worship of Lord Hari in the form of the mountain with unswerving devotion, giving up all other thoughts. So what Vedanta Desika is saying is that I can compose 10,000 more shlokas. The Vedanta Desika hints that he is capable of writing much more chitra shlokas than what is given here. But since the main purpose of the work is actually to describe the glory of Lord Hari, he has only mentioned a few. So the lesson is that when a person gets a particular opulence, we may get carried away by that opulence, and we might actually forget the purpose of that opulence. So there were actually different opulences, wealth or knowledge, beauty, etc. So knowledge is one of the opulence. Vedanta Desika is one of the great scholars. Like, he has composed many shlokas. He is like, I can compose many more shlokas like that, but the main purpose of this work is to actually glorify Lord Hari. So I am actually stopping here. So he does not get carried away by that knowledge, and he is actually focused on the purpose. So when we actually compare Vedanta Desika with Indra, so the character of Indra, Indra is a devotee, but Indra, he got carried away by the opulence which he has received, and he actually forgot that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and he has actually become filled with pride. So that is why actually Krishna is going to actually crush Indra's pride. So I'll stop with the last this thing. So in the 10th canto, in another instance, Shukadeva Goswami, when he describes about Krishna's killing of Narakasur or Baumasur, so it is described that Indra comes to Dwaraka and actually personally requests Krishna that this Baumasur has actually stolen the earrings of Aditi, and this Baumasur has stolen the umbrella of Varuna, and he has stolen the playground of the demigods. So please do something. Then Krishna goes all the way from Dwaraka to Prag Jyotishpur to kill Baumasur. So it is described that Krishna goes with such a speed that the residents of Dwaraka and the residents of Prag Jyotishpur, which is in Assam actually, they see the event simultaneously. Both of them, they see the departure of Krishna and arrival of Krishna in Prag Jyotishpur simultaneously. So that was the speed with which actually Krishna went to Prag Jyotishpur. That's like, suppose you take off plane from Mumbai here, and then next second somebody sees you in New York. You may think like, maybe impossible. Like something like that. Both of them actually saw the Krishna taking off and then landing in Prag Jyotishpur simultaneously. So then, of course, there's an elaborate description of how Krishna kills the fortifications of Baumasur, how Krishna kills the Mura demon and the sons of Mura demon. And then the soldiers of Baumasur come to attack Krishna. So there it is described, when the soldiers of Baumasur come to attack Krishna, they actually, they throw like different weapons at Krishna. So there is a beautiful description which is given. So that time, Krishna actually shoots arrows at all the soldiers. So it is described, first actually Krishna kills all the soldiers. So all the soldiers, they actually throw the weapons at Krishna. So, but first actually Krishna shoots arrows at the soldiers when the missiles were in the air. So after killing the soldiers, then Krishna shoots arrows and actually destroys all the missiles which are there in the air. So you can, and Krishna shoots three arrows, and not at once, but one arrow at a time. So Sukadev Goswami, he is so excited by the astonishing power of Krishna, the speed with which actually Krishna was shooting the arrows. They actually first threw the all the missiles at great speed. But first Krishna killed the people who threw, and then Krishna killed the missiles which were there in the air. And that too actually, Krishna actually threw one arrow at a time, not three arrows at a time. And there were so many missiles which were actually thrown by all these soldiers. So that was the speed with which actually Krishna was shooting the arrows. So Sukadev Goswami is saying, he is actually so astonished by the power of Krishna, he is saying that, oh Kurudvaha, he is telling Parikshit Maharaj, oh best among the Kurus, he says, even among the Kurus like Bhishma and Drona, nobody has shown such expertise in actually throwing arrows. And then, Krishna actually kills Bhaumasur. Then Krishna goes all the way to the heavenly planets to hand over, personally hand over the earrings of Aditi and the umbrella of Varuna to Indra. Then Indra immediately offers obeisances and he cries tears, and then he offers obeisances to Krishna. And then when he was coming back, he sees the Parijata tree. And Satyabhama wants the Parijata tree, and Krishna actually approves the Parijata tree. And then immediately Indra, being instigated by his wife, he actually attacks Krishna. And then Krishna actually fights with Indra, and Krishna defeats Indra. So Sukadev Goswami, again he is actually astonished. Because Parikshit Maharaj is astonished, because one moment back, Indra was offering obeisances. Krishna personally served Indra, and one moment back, Indra was actually offering obeisances to Krishna. And one moment later, Indra was fighting with Krishna. So, Sukadev Goswami is saying, so what is the nature of these demigods? They are supposed to be in the mode of goodness, but they are showing the mode of ignorance, they are showing anger. And this anger is shown by the leader of the demigods. And he is saying, what anartha does wealth create in a person? So this is the, he is actually condemning the demigods, how they are actually intoxicated with wealth. So Radhanath Swami Maharaj explained in his class, he said that when Krishna gives certain opulences to a person, those opulences are given by Krishna so that the devotee can engage those opulences in the service of Krishna and not for one's own enjoyment. But sometimes the demigods like Indra, they become forgetful that, oh, these opulences are there for their own enjoyment. So then actually Krishna subdues their pride. So I'll end here. To summarize, initially we talked about the lesson of how one should not depend too much on logic, how Nanda Maharaj, they actually blindly followed Krishna. And secondly, we talked about how the difference between the material master and a material servant, and a spiritual master and a spiritual servant. And then we talked about the lesson on preaching, that the purpose of preaching is to elevate the person's faith from a sub-religious principle to the highest religious principle, not simply to break the person's faith. And how it is important to understand the intention of a person, and the importance of having a personal guidance. So without the help of the acharyas, we might actually misunderstand the words of Krishna. And we can follow a great soul when it is consistent with We can follow the actions of a great soul when it is inconsistent with what he speaks and when it is inconsistent with what is there in the scriptures. So one should depend, one should have a healthy balance of dependence on Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. And then we talked about the pride of Indra. We gave that example. So I'll end here. Anybody has? I think since it's 9:20 I'll end here. ग्रंथना श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय गौर भक्त वृंद की जय